The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Here, how you doing?
Excellent. I'm sitting on the tail end of the Nashville bench. Mitch, nice to visit with you. Dan, all good to talk to you.
You too.
Wow, already in the rink at 5 o'clock for an 8 o'clock start. I'm impressed.
I was in the rink an hour ago.
Yeah, because you want to stay out of trouble.
No, I just like being at the rink. I always get here at the same time.
Did you stay out of trouble last night?
I did. I went to a production meeting at Morton Steakhouse, and when that was over, I walked right back to the hotel and turned on the television and fell asleep and woke up at 6:30 this morning. Yeah. So, yes, I slept great.
Yeah, good for you. Must have been a little tempting.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No question. Now, I'll tell you, if Nashville wins tonight, I'll go out after the game tonight. If Nashville loses, I'll be getting up very early tomorrow to fly to Winnipeg.
Right.
So there'll be no carousing tonight if Nashville loses.
What do you anticipate being the difference in the end here tonight?
I think the crowd can make a huge difference, pro or con. I think if Nashville gets off to a good start and Forsberg and Johansson and Arvidsson in particular can dominate offensively, then I think it becomes a huge problem for Winnipeg. But if Scheifele and Wheeler in particular and Kyle Connor can start to dictate the terms, I think that becomes a big problem because then the crowd kind of gets out of it. And I can tell you in this building in particular, when the crowd's out of it, it's not easy for the home team. When the crowd's in it, it's brutally difficult for the visiting team, brutally difficult.
You can tell they are rehearsing the opening as Pierre speaks. Anybody we know?
Well, at least it's O Canada. They won't bring the other act out. I'm just telling you because it's a surprise.
Okay, that's why I asked anybody we know. Yeah, Dan, you were going to jump in there?
No, I was going to ask the same thing. Who is that? Then, yeah, I realized it was our anthem, and yeah, a little surprise to come, so that's good.
All right, well, there is no surprise in terms of Mike Fisher's availability, right?
Right. Unless they're playing possum, which I don't think they are. I talked to Scotty Hartnell this morning for a long time, and Scotty's in. I'd be surprised if Ryan Hartman were not in. So I don't see Mike Fisher being in. I would be, again, who knows if they're playing possum, so I'm not going to give you an injury report. Not fair to do that, but I would be shocked if he were playing.
Pierre, at this time of year when you're going to a Game 7, one of the things I always do, no matter what whoever is involved in a series, you always look for guys who have some kind of track record, right? And for whatever reason, it hasn't happened yet. And there are certainly a couple of names that stand out. It's almost like, okay, who cares if it's taking them Game 7? If they put the puck in tonight and their team wins, it's worth the wait. Kyle Turris hasn't done anything offensively, and Nick Ehlers for Winnipeg hasn't scored. What do you think there?
Well, it's interesting because I talked about Turris this morning on Ottawa radio. He hadn't done a lot offensively since the playoffs started. You know, going back to their first round with Colorado. But what he's done is he's stabilized the game in a lot of different aspects. Very solid in terms of his own zone. Really solid in the neutral zone. He's distributed the puck well off transition opportunities. Hasn't led to a lot of points, but I think he's been a solid player for them. Ehlers is a quick strike offensive guy. That's what he is, and that's what he will be. If he's going to have the kind of career I think he should have, he'll be known for that. He'll be known scoring these highlight reel goals with not a lot of thought. It's just his creativity and his skill is phenomenal. He can't think the game like that. He just does it. It's instinctive for him. So in a series like this where the defense of Nashville, in particular in games 6 and game 4, the defense was so darn good for Nashville, he really couldn't get going. They turned it into a swamp, the entire rink. So that's a problem for players like that. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out for everybody.
You talk so often about the importance of being able to enjoy yourself in the moment. In a Game 7 situation, is that doubly important? And are you concerned if anyone might be showing any apprehension, can that affect their game?
You know what is interesting? I was talking to Nicky Bonino this morning. Again, we talked about him yesterday, but I have a lot of trust in Nicky. He knows how to take the temperature of his team. And you know, he says, not a lot of Game 7 experience on either side. He's right. There's not a lot. You know, the last time these guys were in a Game 7, it was on the road. I was doing the game with Doc Emrick out in Anaheim. And they shocked the world. Shea Weber was on that Nashville team, and they beat Anaheim. And they shocked Anaheim. They shocked the world with that one. They really did. They had never played a Game 7 in this building. So it's not just the players who are a little bit nervous, and they are. They are nervous, I can tell you. They can say how much they're enjoying it. They can smile at the camera. They're nervous. I watched them skate this morning. They looked good. It was an optional skate, but they still, after the skate, they looked a little tight. Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know their team chemistry well enough to know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. For Winnipeg, I saw them too. They were jittery. They were definitely jittery. So they can all talk about enjoying the moment. There's not a lot of experience for them to fall back on. I think that's the biggest thing in Game 7s. I can tell you, just from having been through so many of them, you know, whether it's as a coach or as a broadcaster, been through a ton of Game 7s. You know, I wish I had the count. But someday I'll try to get you that number. But it's a lot. And that's the biggest thing. It's just the composure factor you have to have in Game 7. That's the thing I remember the most from coaching, is just the team that usually has the most composure, they usually win.
Well, one coach with composure, I think, Pierre, is Paul Maurice, who I've always liked him. And I'm glad that he's been kept on in Winnipeg. There was a time where, you know, there was questions, maybe they underachieved, and would he pay the price? You hear that, you know, this guy's a good coach, that guy's a good coach. I'm assuming you think he is. And if you do, why do you believe he's a good coach?
You know, what a great question, Dan. I'll tell you, here's the difference. I think Paul Maurice is one of those guys that manages situations. I don't think he's a tactical genius. I don't think he's a bench management genius. You know, I've watched him coach enough games over the course of his career. What I do think is he manages situations fantastically well. He's extremely literate. He speaks very well. There's not a lot of confusion in his message. He knows how to calm rough waters, which I think he did last summer. I think his job was very much on the line. But he found a way to go into that boardroom and convince the manager, Kevin Shaveldayoff, and convince ownership, Mr. Chipman and Mr. Thompson. He found a way to calm those waters and say, I'm the guy for you guys. I'm the guy that can keep this ship going in the right direction. Keep me on. And he found a way to do that. So I think he's a guy that's a message guy. And I think that resonates well in this new NHL. I think he had a difficult time, and his record might speak to this, in the NHL where millennials weren't a very real part of it because tactics were more involved at that time. But I think now, you know, you can see he's somebody whose message is resonating. There's no question.
Well, because you mentioned that word millennials, and it's important today in every sport, I don't know if you've seen or heard the exchange, and we played it here yesterday a couple times, that Shaq and Charles Barkley had on TNT in the aftermath of DeMar DeRozan, and Barkley arguing that you have to be able to get along with your best player on your team if you're Dwayne Casey, and Shaq basically saying you got to stop babying these guys. And it went into a yell fest, right?
Yeah.
It was very entertaining. But it's a subject that comes up with us quite a bit. How do you, as a head coach, walk that fine line? You need your best player, but there are times when your best player is not yet an established star or future Hall of Famer, where you got to sit him down. You got to hold him accountable without losing him. How do you do that?
It's really hard. I think you have to have built up trust over the course of a year with your star player. You need to show the star player that you're going to put him into situations that are advantageous. And I think if you can do that, the star player is going to trust you, and he's going to be willing to go the extra mile for you, and he's going to be prepared to lead. Can I give you a news flash?
Yep.
Unless my eyes are deceiving me, I know who's singing the anthem tonight for Nashville. Do you want to know?
Shoot.
Sheryl Crow.
Oh,
don't
wow.
Don't tell anybody. Yeah, she's standing about.
We got a scoop. How about that? Sheryl Crow. You want to put her on?
But don't. No.
Why not?
I'm on the bench. She's down in the hallway. I'm looking right at her.
So? Ask her if she wants to go on with Mitch in Montreal.
No, please.
Oh, that's
so
pretty
cool. I hope
my
scoop is right. Maybe she's just warming up, but that's definitely her.
Yeah, somebody there are more than a few people with name recognition hanging around Nashville on any given day, right?
Well, they'll be at the game tonight.
Yeah,
one of the big ones, obviously, is Jason Aldean. Jason's here all the time. He's one. If you haven't seen him in concert, you need to go. He is a phenomenal performer. He's awesome.
That's one of Pierre's favorite songs. When you're, if you told us, if I remember correctly, when you're in the air, right?
Yeah, Flyover States. That's one of them.
Flyover States.
Yeah, I went to go. I took my daughter last year to go see him in Hartford, and we're going this summer at Madison Square Garden again. I think Jason's fantastic. So he comes to a lot of games, and Carrie Underwood's here. There are a lot of them that'll be here tonight. You'll see.
Sheryl
we'll
Crow.
On TV. Wow.
Amazing. Okay, Hal Gill.
She's here. I'm telling you, you can't hear her. They won't turn the mic on because they don't want to let the secret out. Can you hear it? I'm going to hold the phone out. Did you hear that?
I could hear her when you were talking, actually, Pierre. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Sheryl.
Wow.
That's good.
She likes
we're
a good
on first
beer.
Name basis now.
She likes a good beer buzz early in the morning, apparently.
Oh yeah. Well, she got the wrong guy now. So
Hal Gill, 24 hours ago on this show.
It's got to be a team game. They got to move through the neutral zone as a team, and they got to get in the offensive zone and set up their forecheck. And I think if the Preds can do that, I don't think that the Jets can beat them. If it turns into a run and gun and there's turnovers, then the Jets will probably polish them off. And I think both teams know that.
All right, you want to pick up on that, Pierre?
He's right, and I had a really nice visit with Hal this morning, and I told him what I said about him yesterday on your show, and he thought there was some credence to that in terms of how he was able to adjust with the red line being out, the football background. But anyways, yeah, no, he's right on. If you look at, it's really important to study tape of this series because nobody's been able to establish a foothold in it. Nobody's won two games in a row. 4 and 6 were really important games for Nashville. They were hugely important, and they both were defensive gems. That's what they were. They were defensive gems. One was a shutout, and the other one was a one goal against. So that's how they have to play. So Hal's got that nailed. But then they have to engage their stars. And, you know, P.K. Subban in 4 was fantastic. Philip Forsberg in 6 was off the charts. They need to have the defensive style without getting caught up in the hullabaloo of the crowd, and they need to push the pace. Winnipeg, on the other hand, if they can force turnovers and expose Nashville because they're trying to be over-aggressive, they got every opportunity in the world to win this game tonight. Every opportunity.
How about the 2 days off? I don't think there's a player anywhere at this stage of the playoffs that doesn't welcome an extra day, right? But should it favor one team or the other?
I don't think so. I think it's about the same. They've both done the same kind of mileage. So I wouldn't think that it's that big a deal. Maybe Winnipeg had a little less mileage because they played Minnesota in the first round, but they got caught up in some weather situations too. So that kind of affected their rhythm a little bit. I don't think the travel, and I don't think the extra day has anything to do with this. I really don't.
Is there any benchmark or telltale sign in the first period that might indicate which team is going to be set up really well for a win?
If Winnipeg's controlling the tempo of the game with puck possession, I think that that will be a problem for Nashville. If Nashville's pushing the pace and not turning the puck over, then I think that's a big problem for Winnipeg.
What happens? Let's take a different approach here. What happens in each city as a franchise if they don't win?
Well, I don't think there'll be a problem in Winnipeg at all. I think people will be so excited about the future because they have so many players coming down the pipeline. They really do. I think they'll be more disappointed here because they went to the final last year and a lot of people picked them to go back to the final. So I think that there'll be more disappointment in Nashville. I think there'll be some sadness in Winnipeg, but I don't think it'll be like here because I really think these people, you work hard all season long to get a game 7 on home ice. You do. That's just the reality of it. Their fans have been unbelievable here. So I think they'll be more disappointed here. If you lose a game 7 on home ice, it's a problem. You know what's interesting? The Montreal Canadiens philosophy, I hope he's listening right now, when Sam Pollock was running the team in particular, he used to share this with all his people. Our goal as an organization is to win our last home game. That's always how the Canadiens looked at it. So if you think about that reasonably, and he didn't mean the regular season, win your last home game. Usually you'd be in a position to compete for the cup if you always won your last home game. And that was their philosophy all the time because they always believed they were going to have a game 7 at home because they were going to earn it, because they were going to do great in the regular season. And I think for Nashville, having a game 7 at home should be beneficial if, and I stress if, the crowd doesn't turn on them because they play the way they played in game 5 where they were miserable.
Dream as a kid, you know, game seven, home or away, but this is what it all comes down to. This is our season on the line. We've had one goal in mind the whole season, is to get where we want to go, and that's the Stanley Cup Finals again, and Winnipeg's in our way at home. We need to, you know, have a big effort.
I keep coming back to Scott Hartnell. For some reason, I see something good happening for him in
a
game seven like this.
I do too. You know, again, I had a really nice visit with him this morning. We've both been at it a long time, and I'll tell you a good little story. Ray Sherrill called me this morning when I was watching practice. He started with the beginning of the Nashville franchise here, and one of the guys they drafted early on in the history of this franchise was Scotty Hartnell. And Scotty Hartnell still stays in touch with Ray Sherrill to this day, and he refuses to call him Ray Sherrill. He calls him Mr. Sherrill. So he says, "Here, do me a favor. Go down to the dressing room and tell Scotty Hartnell to stop calling me Mr. Sherrill. Call me Ray." So I did that, and Hartnell started laughing. But we had such a nice visit this morning. He's really in a good place. I think it was so smart of Peter Laviolette to inject him into the lineup because it definitely paid dividends. It definitely did.
And I look at a guy like that, Pierre, and he's obviously has a reputation of being a tough guy to play against, certainly in his prime. But to me, he seems to be, from the outside looking in, you talk about good teammates, and maybe sometimes that gets overblown. But is he the kind of guy that when he's around a team, even if he isn't playing, I guess, can he help and be just a real positive source for a team?
Oh, my gosh. I love what you just said. Absolutely. That's such an important part of it. That's the side that analytics never picks up. How do you measure the heart of a guy? How do you measure what a guy provides in the dressing room? How do you measure what he's going to say to a teammate when the guy has a bad day or his girlfriend leaves him or his wife divorces him? You know what I mean? Hartnell's one of those guys that takes the temperature, and he understands it. He's been around so much. He's gone through so much as a player and as a person. He's mature, and he's a tremendous person that way. I'm a huge fan of the guy. I know where he goes in the summer. I know how hard he trains up in Minnesota. He's a really good teammate, and you know, he's had a fantastic career when you consider when he came out of Prince Albert what the vision was for him at the time and where he is now. He's phenomenal. This is really great. Out of nowhere. Apropos nothing. He says his name is William. I'm sure he's Bill, Billy, or Mac, or Buddy.
For the Sheryl Crow scoop there, Pierre.
Yeah, well, I'll probably get in trouble for that, but she was singing. What did they want me to do? She was out there. She was warming up.
Enjoy the game.
Breaking news.
Appreciate it very much, and very much looking forward to it, and we'll talk tomorrow at 5:05.
Mitch, thanks so much. Dan, really nice talking to you. Rod, thanks for hooking us up, and we'll talk tomorrow. Whether it's from Winnipeg or Nashville, I have no idea. Take care.
I would say that what fascinates me about this series is that both Winnipeg and Nashville have players who can be dominant, but also have the propensity for the big mistake.
Let me take a guess, Dan. You enjoy listening to Sheryl Crow more than you enjoy listening to Gord Miller.
I don't even like Sheryl Crow, but you're right.
Well, wait a minute. You started this off quoting a line right out of the song.
I know. That's just a little crack at Gord.
Yeah.
Elite. No, I like Sheryl Crow. She's good. I mean,
she's cool.
She crosses so
cool.
Many genres,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she's just kick-ass. Just have some fun.
Insider Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub with six.